Blog Talk Radio.
This is Real Sports Guys Radio, where real guys talk real sports. You got Devon on the mic, and along with Marcus, Ray will be joining us later. That's the thing about Real Sports Guys, you know, daughter's car breaks down, you got to go fix it, regardless of whether or not you have a radio show or not.
Exactly. So, Daddy's got to handle that.
Got to handle that.
Step in.
So as soon as he gets that done under the light of darkness with the moon shining down on him, as soon as we get that carburetor fixed, Ray will be joining us to provide his insights on this week. But we got a lot going on here. And, you know, like I do, and I like to throw it to the post and let Marcus. I'm not gonna call you Bill Cartwright again, but let you operate the post a little bit and hit some things. I know you've been thinking about a few things. I'll let you start out.
Yeah. Well, you know, first let's just go ahead and dig in. You know. With the finals getting kicked off, and I think they start somewhere around New Year's Eve. I think they're going to play the first game somewhere between now and January 1st of 2011. But that's neither here nor there. Just, you know, they take too long to get it started. They should be playing tonight or tomorrow. They should be playing these games, but whatever. But I'm really excited about the series. Like I said before, I expect the Celtics to take it in five. But I will say I think that all depends on their health and then Rondo. When Rondo is on, that team is hard to beat. And I think he's the biggest difference between the 08 team and the 08 team that the Lakers played and this current team. You know, the Lakers didn't have Bynum in 08. They have Bynum back now. But I think the Rondo that Boston had back then is not even near the level of the player that Rondo is now, you know. And again, when you go back to Ray's analogy of, okay, you finna play a 5-on-5, and you just throw both of the teams, all the players on the teams, into out there on the court, and you picking your five, you're gonna take Kobe first, Paul Pierce second, and then probably Rondo.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
And then you're probably going to take who at that point? Maybe Gasol, maybe Garnett. But
yeah,
you're probably going to snatch up more Celtics early on than you do Lakers.
Yeah, you know? And I agree with that. I think, you know, I was preparing a blog for this week to put up, and, you know, that's what I said. I mean, I felt like, you know, the Lakers are kind of like Mosley was when he's preparing to fight Merriweather. He was kind of like the supporting actor. You know, but it was Merriweather's show. You just knew that this cat was gonna finish, and you know, kind of feel like the Celtics. You know, I think you're right about Rondo, is that he's mature. You know, Derek Fisher's done all he could do, but I don't think he can handle this matchup.
Yeah, I think Rondo's game is exactly what Fisher doesn't want to see. Super athletic, really focused on attacking the basket, and really forces, you know, Fisher to stay in front of him. And I don't think the Lakers want to see that. I mean, as much as their back line can defend the basket and help, I don't think they want to get caught in those situations with Rondo because he's such a good passer.
Yeah.
He's such a good passer because they can't leave Pierce, they can't leave Allen. So that's two guys you can't help off of. So that's your first line. If they put Pierce on one wing, Ray Allen on another wing, or have Ray running off screens, that's two guys that can't help. So now you basically get out there playing 3-on-3 with Fisher, Gasol, and Bynum, or Fisher, Gasol, and Odom, however you want to play it. And I'll take with Garnett and Perkins. And I'll take Rondo, Garnett, and Perkins going 3-on-3 against Fisher and Gasol and whoever else they got in there, whether it's Bynum or Odom, any day.
Yeah, and I, you know, the other thing that I think is, you know, that we don't know about the Lakers, you know, even with the addition of Artest, is are they any tougher than they were 2 years ago physically? You know, can they handle that pounding? Because the Celtics just keep bringing more big men and big men, and they all physical. You know, I've been saying that they're like that late 80s, early 90s type team that's deep, physical, putting the emphasis on defense. And I'm not sure if the Lakers have been tested to the point where they're ready to play that physical. I don't know if Powell is ready to do that. And even with Bynum coming in, I don't know if he's, you know, even with it, with, you know, even if he was healthy, I don't know if mentally he's at that point where he's ready to bang like that for a seven-game series.
And the Lakers don't have any depth. I mean, Vujicic is not really doing anything. Farmar is not really giving him anything. And their bench is actually weaker than it was in 08. You know, the bench that they had in 08, Vujicic was hitting shots, making baskets. Luke Walton was still relevant. You know, now, if they get a good game out of any of those guys, I think they'll be thrilled. If they can get two good games out of any combination of those dudes, I think they'd be thrilled. And here's a question. Whatever happened to Adam Morrison? Like, I'm looking at him like, he can't give them nothing?
Well, I think about Morrison is that he was just a lost cause. And it's hard once you go to that first team and you don't get the kind of tick and the kind of respect that you need to actually rebound. You know, his career has not taken off the way it needs to take off.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't even – right now, J.J. Redick is having a better pro career than he is. I mean, J.J. Redick has carved out a little niche for himself. I mean, he's figured it out, how he needs to fit in with that team, you know, in Orlando. And I just don't see I'm actually baffled because I thought Morrison was a much better prospect than Redick coming out. You know, the talk was really about those two being, you know, decent pro players. People thought Redick was – I mean, Morrison was going to be – more than he was. You know, I never thought he was going to be what some people thought he was as far as, like, being the next Bird. I didn't see that, but I thought he could score 15, 16 points a night in the league. Hell, Wally Szczerbiak did.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, in his career may not be. I mean, the fact that, you know, depends on how long Phil sticks around and allows, you know, him to find his way into a lineup, what happens with him for free agency. You know, he might be a person that can, you know, maybe find that second win. You know, definitely that offense can fit his game. But, you know, I think it might take him some time. That he might be one of those cats that kind of bloom late, you know, in an offense like that, as long as he has a coach like, you know, depending on how many years Phil stays there and can kind of get him into the lineup. You know, but he's going to learn, he's gonna have to play some defense, and that's, you know, that wasn't always his strong suit. And definitely the Lakers have put a bigger emphasis on defense. So, you know, I don't see him, you know, doing that. But he's a cat that's sitting at the end of the bench. I mean, they don't have a lot of depth. I mean, every time you look down, if you look down the Celtics bench and then you look down the Lakers bench, you know, the Celtics keep bringing, you know, the quality stays up there. And
I mean, just think about it. They hadn't played Nate Robinson in like 2 or 3 games in that series. And he came out and gave them something.
He came out with the kryptonite suit on. Superman was like, "Who's this?" he was like, "Who's this?"
But now he was out there to make a difference, and that's what you need. You need
He must have heard us talk about him on the air, you know, and decided he needed to show up. But that's the depth of that team, you know. And Doc just, you know, pulled him in the game and asserted him. And, you know, Rondo was laying on his stomach with a la Larry Bird. And and they went to work. And that's the thing. It's going to be interesting, you know, to see how the Lakers handle that. You know, they got home court, you know, and so, you know, that kind of gives them a little bit. You know, the one factor I'm thinking is that it's the Kobe factor, you know, and that's the part that you can't really you know, you can't really factor in. So even when I talk about the soft, you know, I've been talking about the whole dog factor. You know, you got to have a little bit of dog in your game. Well, Kobe's the ultimate dog. He's an offensive alpha.
Right,
and that's the factor that you can't really equate, you know, in terms, especially since he already has a championship under his belt. That's the one you don't know. You can't really figure out what he gonna do. And you know, like I wrote in my blog, I'm writing is that you know you may not want to put Ray Allen on. You don't put anybody on him that's gonna make him feel like he gotta prove something. You know, I was saying put Brian Scalabrine on him. You know, put somebody on that's gonna make him laugh and make him lose his game. You can't just put anybody on him, but he's that one factor for them that you can't really account for in the game.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of Kobe, that brings us to another topic. And you know, let's say the Lakers do pull us out. Let's say they do pull us out and they do win this. Where does that put them?
Where does that put
Kobe in the pantheon? You know, what is that? You know he's been chasing Jordan's ghost his whole career. So where does that put Kobe? Does that put him in a conversation where you can legitimately talk about him and Mike? I mean, he had that one for the thumb, you know. 5 in comparison to 6.
Well, he's definitely in the room. And so, I mean, he's already in the room. He's already at the table. But he's definitely in the room. But you got to, I don't know what winning another championship does. I mean, he's won 2 on his own, and you don't know, you know, how that's going to impact it. But, you know, you got to put him up against it, and especially if he beats his Boston team, which, you know, everybody's recognizing the real, you know, I mean, if this Boston team wins, that's going to put them up there in some conversations, you know, not in that top, you know. But, you know, this is definitely a team that's had a run, you know. So this is a formidable, you know, foe that he's going to beat. And that would put him right there with Jordan. I'm almost thinking he needs one more, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
I almost feel like he needs one more, you know. But, you know, this definitely puts him closer. I mean, people are going to debate it, but I almost feel like he needs one more. I don't know why I say that, but, you know, I just feel like he might need one more to say, you know, I'm outdoing Mike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and because – the thing about it is, he has Gasol, but he doesn't have the Pippen, right?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have the Horace Grant, and he doesn't have the Rodman like Jordan had. So, you know, he can definitely argue that as part of it. But I would definitely, you know, there's going to be some debate, put it like that, if he wins this one.
You know, The other night in that game 6, that closeout game against Phoenix, that was the first time, and I know some Kobe fans are probably going to kill me for saying this at least, that was the first time I ever really enjoyed watching Kobe Bryant play, man. Just the way he was balling down the stretch, I was like, this dude is really, really killing these cats right now. I mean, Grant Hill, Channing Frye, Dudley, whoever they put on, man, was playing excellent defense. I mean, excellent defense. As a ball player, you can't ask a cat to do no more than that than what they were doing on defense against Kobe. And Kobe was just steady killing them, just steady tearing, ripping their heart out piece by piece, artery by artery, just snatching their heart out. I mean, it was like a Bruce Lee final fight scene where he's just beating the daylights out of somebody, man. It was really enjoyable to watch. It really was, man. I mean, he just dismantled them. And what made it so great was that they gave everything. They gave it. They threw everything at that man. And he was still just like, come on, coach. That's all you got, with a little pat on the butt.
he did Gentry wrong. But, you know, all Gentry could do is say, damn.
I mean,
you know,
in that moment, you can't really do nothing. You had him covered.
You had him covered, but he just did what he wanted to do. It looks like you might have done something to somebody, because we might have a person here on the line. Let's see who we got here coming on the air with us.
Hey, D. Will.
Hello, who do we got on the air here? Who's this?
Hey, it's Albert. How are you?
What's up? We got a West Coast guy. What's up, Albert? Coming straight out of Arizona.
Representing
the show.
But well, now in Wisconsin though, so I'm converted. But you know, I'm an Arizona guy at heart. So you know, what can I say?
Okay. So are you a Suns fan or what?
You know, when I was back in Arizona, I mostly followed college sports. Still do today. So I'm more of an Arizona Wildcats guy than anything. But yeah, I mean, I used to follow the Suns a little bit, like the Diamondbacks.
Okay.
But mostly college football and basketball with the Wildcats. So.
Oh, okay.
But,
okay.
Yeah, but you know, I hear what you're saying about the finals, and you know, with the Celtics, I agree with you. I see it going to Boston, but I think it's going to go a little longer than five games. I would say Boston in seven if I had to predict, because it's, you know, what you're talking about with the dog factor with Kobe. Man, I don't know. It's something about those guys, the Kobes, the MJs. It's like they always find a way to hit that shot, you know, at the buzzer or, you know, with 10, 15 seconds left in the game to win it. And I don't know. I see Kobe making some of those shots, and I think it's going to go down, you know, to the last game. But you know, for the reasons you were talking about with Boston's depth, and I just think they're too much to handle. I think Boston will take it in seven.
I was going to ask you, well, with that, I mean, what about, because I was about to turn this, but what about Paul Pierce? I mean, Paul's made as many big shots. Paul has been big in the big game. It's kind of like Paul gets nothing. You know, he's from L.A. Don't you think Paul Pierce can be an equalizer?
Yeah, definitely. I could see that. You know, the thing about Boston is they have a lot of they have some guys like, you know, I see Pierce as kind of a, you know, he's a superstar, but he doesn't have, you know, the Kobe factor. I see him as more of kind of a scrappy, you know, he's a fighter, man. He's a winner in sort of that scrappy survivor sense, and you know, I definitely think he could be one of the X factors in this, you know, in the finals. But I don't know. You know what? I've always been a KG fan for some reason.
Okay.
I tend to watch KG a little bit more than Pierce. But yeah, I got to give Pierce respect. I do. I think he's a hell of a ball player. But yeah, I mean, there are a lot of guys on that team I think that can make a difference. Pierce is one of them. So I don't know. It's going to be an interesting series. I'm excited.
Yeah, so, Pierce is an interesting ball player. He's what I call a bucket getter. You know what I mean? He's one of those guys who, when you see him on the court, he doesn't look overly athletic. He doesn't, you know, he shoots the ball well enough. He gets to the rim well enough. You know, he'll dunk on you if he needs to. But no part of his game really, really stands out as far as, like, being ridiculously exceptional, except for the fact that he gets buckets. That's really, I mean, he's one of those players that just finds a way to make baskets. It's really hard to define what he does on the court. Except
mm-hmm.
that he scores, you know, he gets buckets.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's like the 2.0 version of a Mark Aguirre, or Adrian Dantley, a guy who could play inside, play outside, but just got buckets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you need that guy in the playoffs, especially because he's such a tough cover. He is such a tough cover. I'm gonna be excited to watch him and Artest go at it, because if there was one guy in the NBA who I felt like is equipped with the size and then the foot speed to hang with Paul, it would be Artest. So it'll
okay.
be interesting to see how that matchup plays out. Because if he's guarding Artest, unless they put Kobe on Rondo, which could be an ace in the hole for LA, unless they put Kobe on Rondo and let Fisher chase Ray Allen off screens, Kobe's going to have to chase Ray Allen. And I don't know if they want Kobe chasing Ray Allen. Because I mean, Kobe can handle it, but that's a lot of wear and tear running through those screens and chasing Ray all day.
Yeah, he think his back and feet going to hurt. He try to catch up to Ray, he going to be soaking in the tub. Yeah, they need to get away. If they can find a way to let Kobe help on defense and just focus on being a killer on offense, that's going to be their best chance. I mean, I think Artest is that other piece there. That I think you're right, that if he could step up and be physical. I mean, Artest has that, he's not really a Rodman-like quality. I want to put him there, but he can upset, he can cause a little friction. He can get in there and mix it up a little bit.
and cause other folks to feel like they can stick their chest out. So he's definitely that cat, you know, that can be physical with Pierce, because Pierce is strong. And so I agree with that. Albert, how would you break down the coaching matchup? What do you think about that?
That's an interesting question. I was actually going to bring that up because, for me, I think those are two of the best coaches in the league right there. Obviously, I mean, you know, far and away with Jackson and with Rivers, but. Jackson, I think the advantage that he has, I think, is pretty obvious, is that he's got the finals experience. He's got the playoff experience. And how many rings does he have now? I can't remember the total number, but, I mean, I know he's got Rivers beaten by a long way there. So,
yeah, Phil is
so,
a 10.
So, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Phil's got the rings. But I always said about Phil, you know, I look at Phil, and I was telling, and I think we might have Ray join us on here in a minute. Let me pull Ray in here, because hey Ray, is that you?
Yeah, that's me.
All right, Ray's on. What I want to say about Phil, and I was telling Ray this the other day. I love the fact that Phil got two rings. I'm not going to argue too much on that. But Phil kills me because I've never heard Phil interviewed and walked away. You know, like if you hear Hubie Brown talk about basketball, you're like, man, he just hit me with a whole bunch of knowledge. I hear Phil interviewed. So I'm always looking at the cat sitting next to him. You know, who are the coaches sitting on either side of it? I think what Phil is a great delegator, which I love about it. He got 10 rings. He can't bottom them out. But I think that at some point, I think Doc has found a way to get that depth to work for him. And I'm not going to run my Doc Rivers thing again, but I think he's found a way to get that depth to work for him. And, I don't know what Phil going to pull out. You know, before it was, you know, it was Nash and he was holding the ball and crossing over and doing all that. He hit Durant with something. I don't know what he going to say about the Celtics before, you know.
He already started. What
did he say?
He's already started. He's already started with his same crying that he used to do when they used to play those New York series in Chicago. He's already started. He's already talking about how they bang and how they're physical and how he has a finesse team. And he's already started. Phil is like the anti-Muhammad Ali. He don't want to talk about what he can do. He want to talk about what everybody else going to do. He's trying to get the calls. He's already started to get the calls before the series even starts. Didn't you see him today?
He's crying.
He's crying already. He makes Chaney look like a choir boy. He did it when he was in Chicago. It's sickening to watch. He's begging already.
And I don't know how he gets away with it.
What's that?
I don't know how he gets away with it. What did he call him out? Like Nash called him out. Call him out.
He's got
10 rings.
Yeah.
Right. Today he's talking about, you know, he's talking about Garnett and how, you know, Garnett would bump you 2, 3, 4 times. Finally, they, you know, called him for an offensive foul, you know, but. He's already starting, you know. He's saying, you know, we don't have guys like that. Maybe Ron is a little bit like that. Maybe Derek Fisher might play a little bit that way, and certainly Kobe is what he said. But it's like, you know, you used to shine up Pippen like that, you know. New York used to beat the hell out of Pippen. I used to think Scottie Pippen would go home and cry. You know, because he got pissed on. You know, it was just sad. And it was sad that Phil had to call him, you know, they're picking on my guy, you know. They're banging him around. And then the next game, all of a sudden, those calls that shouldn't be called are now all of a sudden they're fouls because Phil said they're fouls.
Yeah.
It's just sad. It's like, you know, you wouldn't. If those were your sons, you wouldn't protect them that way. You know, like, go out there and bump them. You know, bump them back. You know, we got the finesse team. you know, it's fine if they got the finesse and it works for them, but if it doesn't work for them, you know, he'll sit there. He's already crying. He's already trying to get calls.
Well, that's what Phil does. I mean, Devon was kind of talking about it before, saying that, you know, he feels like he delegates responsibility to his other coaches. I think that's Phil's business model right now, is that, like, I got my defensive coach. You know, I got Clemens to handle that. I got Tex handling the offense. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to manage personalities. I'm going to manage personalities. I'm going to manage the psyche of this team. I'm going to manage the ebb and flow and keep these guys focused while they handle the X's and O's. And if we can do that together, we got this covered. And I think that's been his business model. You know, that's been the way he rolls. When he rolls into town with a team, that's what he's focusing on. He's focusing on, okay, I'm going to handle the psyche of this team and getting this team prepared and developing the championship psyche. You guys get them to play championship defense. You get them to play championship offense. I will get them mentally championship ready.
Hey, if you just joined us now, we're talking about, you know, this is our NBA Finals preview. If you want to join the conversation like Albert, you can call 347-989-0844. If you're online, there's a button right by. If you're listening, you can click and you can get right into the queue. We want to bring more people to the conversation. So if you want to get in, 347-989-0844. We also got the chat lines open. So if you want to chat, put something out there for us to think about, we'll check it on the chat line. All right, fellas, let's get back to the NBA Finals. So now, Albert, so you said it's going to be more than five. So who are you picking? Yeah, well, how many games?
I'm gonna have to go with the Celtics because I still agree with everything that you said about, you know, like about the depth and you know, about the starting five and how, you know, they definitely have you know, the kind of talent that you want to pick up. But there's something about that Lakers team, and you know, and this, I think it's back to kind of how I think about things like the NCAA tournament or you know, kind of these tournaments or finals that where you have an element of unpredictability. You just have a gut feeling that some teams are just going to pull it out in some of these games, and you have to balance that with some of your, I think, your statistical analysis. And so on paper, I mean, it looks like Boston's going to do it in five or six, you know, so I could see that, you know, what you were saying earlier. I think when you guys picked Boston in five, but I don't know. I see Kobe or, you know, one of these guys coming up with a big shot at the end of one of these games, maybe a couple of games, and you know, with Phil Jackson and you know, some of the talent this Lakers team has. I see them winning a couple more games and maybe taking it to the last one, and I would go with I'd go with Boston in seven.
Boston in seven. Mark it down. Albert's got Boston in seven. Ooh, okay. we have to have you on afterwards you know, see if you're right, talk about your pick, talk about you, if you're wrong. But I think you broke it down. You did a really good analysis of it. I mean, we might have to, yeah, I hope we have to have you as a regular here on the show. Do we have any more thoughts about the finals from the fellas?
I certainly do. Just watching that last game with the Lakers and watching how, you know, Kobe just, you know, really put the nail in the coffin on those guys. You know, I didn't forget about that in him, but it certainly drove a point home that if they've got that lead, you know, L.A. is a real nasty team. When they decide to get close, and Kobe says, you know, I'm going to take this over and win this ball game. You know, as soon as they seem to get close, you know, he would just hit a shot that he really shouldn't hit. You know. The defense was all over him, and he was hitting shots still. I also forgot the fact that this is a L.A. home court advantage. I still think Boston's going to win, but I'm thinking seven games, too. I just hope the old boys have enough in them to last that long, because if they don't have a lead going into that, you know, that final third of that fourth quarter, I don't know that Kobe will let them in the house. You know, it's going to get real interesting that way. But on the same token, you know, that when you look at the matchups and you realize that, you know, with these two teams, it's Kobe and the Lakers, and it's Boston with a bunch of depth, and I think that whoever has the hot hand for Boston can lead them, you know, that particular night. And it could be somebody different, you know, for five games. And so, you know, all they got to do is pull out four, right? They got to come out of L.A. with a win early. And after that, you know, I think that they have all that they need to win a championship. They just, you know, the clock is ticking on these old boys. So seven games is going to be tough.
Are you still sticking with your pick, or have you made an adjustment? What are you going with? We're getting this on tape.
I think I went with Boston in six, and I think it's going to take all of that,
okay.
Especially given the fact that, you know, they're going to be in L.A. first and last. So, you know, I mean, if it comes down to, you know, seven games, it could be real. That seventh game is going to be real interesting. Because anything can happen in that seventh game. It's interesting to see how each of these teams come out, because I expect somebody to come out flat. This is a long time. I don't remember Memorial Day without a playoff game.
And
you know, these series ended early for both of them. And so now they've gone. They're going to be almost a week without a basketball game. And you would like to think that favors Boston. But if somebody comes out flat, you know, it could get real ugly real quick, especially if it's L.A. They have to win these first two games at home. And so, you know, that's the way I look at it. If they win these first two games at home, it becomes a real interesting series. But I could, you know, I think if L.A. comes out flat, Boston takes a game, Boston will be happy coming out of there 1-1 and, you know, heading back to Boston.
To me, what's going to really be the indicator of how this series is going to go, I think it's going to depend on two things. The first thing is if Phil decides to put Kobe on Rondo. If Phil puts Kobe on Rondo, that's going to be one factor. And then that's going to set off the next factor, which is how Rondo then responds when he steps out there or he comes out that next come out the timeout and now Kobe's on him for the rest of the game. However Rondo responds to that is going to dictate who's going to win the series. If Rondo responds and goes at Kobe and attacks Kobe, then I still think that bodes well for Boston because that shows that he's going to be aggressive and he's not going to back down from that challenge. But I think at some point in the series, we're going to see Kobe exclusively guarding Rondo when he's in the game. I think that's really the only way the Lakers can contain Rondo is to put Kobe on him, have Kobe play off, use his length to affect Rondo's shaky shot. If I'm Phil, that's what I'm going to do.
But I think that Boston as a team could wait for that to happen. I think that they'd lick their chops for something like that to happen. Kobe has to guard Pierce. You know, I think
Arteta's gonna guard Pierce.
Between
this team and the 08 team is they got Ron Ron now.
Yeah.
They're gonna put Queensbridge over on Inglewood. And we're going to get the East Coast, West Coast rivalry for him again, like it was 96.
But again, so, you know, that's
somebody
what,
gets
you know,
of
that's
the game.
What, you know, that's, you know, and this is what we're talking about with that Boston depth, is that L.A. really has to do some crazy shit to get in this game.
Yep, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They have to do something really off the wall and play out of position. They still got to put a point guard on the floor. And that point guard is going to have to guard somebody, and no matter who they put him on, it's going to be a mismatch. If they leave him on Rondo, you know, he's going to get chewed up. If they put him on somebody bigger, he's going to get chewed up. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think they're going to take his chance with Fisher chasing Ray Allen around.
Yeah, that's right.
Sure.
Fisher chasing Ray
Allen. Sure.
But and I think what they'll do is I think it'll pick spots. So I think it'll happen, you know, it'll be a fourth quarter thing. It won't be something that you'll see all the time, but it'll be enough when you get some key possessions. You know, it might be in the fourth quarter where they put him on Rondo late. So it's kind of like how they were playing the zone, like Phoenix was doing it. You know, you still had to mix it up. But, I don't know if they'll have Kobe, because you need Kobe. Rondo's still going to make you run. And so you don't want to be able to pace Kobe a little bit and allow him to be a threat offensively. But I think that, you know, you might, when it comes down to the fourth quarter, where it's money time, you know, that you'll probably see that switch up happening. And, you know, I think, yeah, you can get away with having somebody chase Ray Allen. Because Ray Allen's been known to have some off games. He's just the thing about the jump shooter. You know, you can, you know, you're going to have some off. If you don't feel right, you miss a couple. You know, Ray disappeared before. So, you know, I would take my chances as well with Ray not having a good night. Now, if he starts
hitting, I don't see them coming out of a timeout or coming into a quarter, you know, with Kobe on Rondo. What I see is when they make a switch, when they run him off a pick, they're not going to try to switch back. It's just stay with him, stay with him, stay with him. Mm-hmm. Don't let him get that next pass off. Smother him out there in the corner, smother him out there on the side. But I don't see them tipping their hand like that, you know, on any given play. I don't see them coming out of a timeout and all of a sudden you see Kobe guarding Rondo. Because if you look, then they're just going to look around and go, well, you know, who was Kobe guarding? Because that's where we're going. You know, and then Rondo,
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Kobe guarding? He's got to score right now.
Right. And that's exactly the way you take them right out of that. Then send them back to the huddle going, we don't know what to do now. I think it's got to come off of a pick. It's got to come off of a switch. They're not going to be so quick to switch back. And then you might be able to get away with it. But just to say, we go tip off and all of a sudden you look and Kobe's guarding Rondo, somebody looking at Fisher going, who he guarding? Who he guarding? Because he, you know, and if it's Ray Allen, Ray Allen's just smiling. Because Ray goes, you know, he got to sit there and I ain't going to miss all this stuff. You know,
but the thing about it is they were able to do that against Steve Nash, but you're talking about a Phoenix team that wasn't really hitting the glass like you're going to see Boston hitting the glass. Because when you switch in like that, you open up opportunities for rebounds, offensive rebounds, and that's why I think it's better to start. If Kobe's going to guard him, at some point he's got to put him on it. I mean, you're going to switch at some point, but I think if you're going to get the money down the stretch, you got to put him on him and let him fight through those screens. I mean, that's what the size factor can bother you. Let them fight through the screens and try and get there, because if you start switching, them cats going to get on that glass and they're going to clean up.
Yeah, because I'm guarding Rondo, when am I going to give this cat? Because you got to give her – anytime you're playing against a good offensive player, you got to give him some. His strengths are his speed, his ability to get to the basket, his ability to set up other people when he's in the lane.
That's right.
And his weakness is his jump shot. So when you got a guy who can't shoot but is quick, you put length on him.
That's right.
You put length on him,
right,
and somebody that can get a hand into his shot, which is shaky to begin with, and you want to entice him to take those shots. But somebody who's still quick enough where if they give him a little bit of space, they can still cut him off and try and keep him out of the paint. And that, to me, that would be Kobe. And that's why Kobe seems like the logical choice. And at that point, you just say, you know what, if we're going to get beat by Ray Allen, we're going to get beat by Ray Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, but
we're
going to
let Rondo beat us. Because what Rondo has proven in this playoffs is that when he's on, he's – Boston is hard to beat. It's hard as hell to beat when Rondo's going.
Yes, sir.
But he proved that against Orlando. Those two games he didn't play well, Orlando won. He plays well,
but
has 4 points in that first quarter. It's a wrap.
If I'm Doc, and I see Kobe even inch towards Rondo, right away Rondo's going through three screens. I'm hitting Kobe every time. You know, I'm sending Rondo around everybody. And I want to elbow in his chin. And make Kobe just chase his ass all night. Chase him all night. Because if Kobe burns himself on one end of the court, he can't burn himself on the other. And that's exactly the position you want to put L.A. in. Make somebody else make them shots. Make somebody else have to take them shots. I think that, again, goes back to that depth. I think that Boston will go ahead and play those games. It's funny that you know, we're talking about it like this because, you know, L.A. realizes that they have to do something different. They have to do something different. With Phoenix, you knew if you could stop Nash, you could stop Stoudemire. That's just the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
If you could stop Stoudemire, you can pretty much stop Nash. You know, you make Nash play your game. Boston's not like that. Boston's got players that will step up. And so on any given night, somebody's going to get 25 points. And, you know, they wait to see who it's going to be every single night. They don't know if it's going to be Garnett. They don't know if it's going to be Pierce. It could be Ray Allen. It could be Rondo getting you 18. You know, you don't know how it's – you don't realize how they're going to come at you. And so when you try to stop that, when you try to go after that, if Doc is smart, you say, you know, it's just like when you watch Randy Moss. Once you look out there and see Randy Moss is being covered by, you know, somebody, then you look across the field to see who's not being covered. And that's exactly what Boston should do, you know. Once you realize that they're going to put their best defensive player on Rondo, if they do that, then everybody else has just got to be grinning like the butcher's dog, you know, because he can't come over and help. He can't do nothing. This is his job tonight, to chase this little cat around. And that's exactly what you know, if I'm Doc, they just made it easy for me because I'm running Kobe's ass to death. I'm running Rondo right back to the locker room. I'm running him out to the car. You know, I'm having Kobe chase his ass.
I think that's the advantage that Rondo, having Rondo give to Boston, because it's either put Kobe on Rondo or put him on Ray Allen. And, again, like I was telling Devon earlier, Kobe, I don't think really you want Kobe running through all those screens. Rondo, if he runs through the screens, it's more just a working. Rondo ain't really trying to come off and jack on him. You know, Rondo's going to try to come off and curl it and get into the paint. But Ray going to come off and jack on him and probably knock him down.
Try to.
Albert, I heard you trying to get in on this.
What's that?
With Albert. Oh, were you trying to get some? If y'all want to join the call like Albert's on, it's 347-989-0844. You got to be quick, Albert. So I want to make sure you get in on the conversation.
You know, I'm enjoying listening to it, so that's all I'm over there.
Albert's our special guest tonight. You know, you can join the roundtable at any time. We got Albert here hanging out with us tonight. So we just want to make sure we take care of our guests, you know, like any good real sports guy. It's like being in your man cave. We're just going to take care of you. You know, come down and hang out with us. So I want to make
Albert, how many points does Kobe got to average in this series for them to really have a chance? How many points does Kobe Bryant?
Well, thank God.
Well, I think, much like the Phoenix series, you know, Kobe's got to hit 30. Kobe's got to hit at least 30 points on every L.A. win. Not that they should try to stop that or to try to reduce that, but I'm just wondering how much pressure Kobe's going to be under to get this done, because I don't think he have much else.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I saw today that he has right now 29.4 games. So, yeah, he's going to have to at least get there. I think in most, if not all, the games that he plays in the series. Because I mean, you know, it's like for all the reasons we've been talking about, it's like Boston just has too many guys who can score, and I don't think he's going to carry the Lakers all by himself, because obviously he's got some talented guys around him, but he's a pretty big portion, I think, of their scoring. And yeah, he's definitely going to have to get up to that, you know, at least 30 a game every night to give him a chance to take it all the way. So I agree with you.
Do you think, what about Gasol? What about some of these other guys? I mean, you know, those are the undecideds yet, because if you remember what Boston did to Gasol a couple years ago.
Gasol, they
really
Gasol.
Froze him up. What's that?
They
froze
him
out. You know, they manhandled him, and I think that's why Phil is starting to cry already, because he sees this happening again. He sees, you know, he doesn't have the guys that are gonna go in there and draw a line in the sand. You know, Boston's going to bring the game to them, and they're going to be backpedaling, I think, for the whole series. There's no way that it's going to be a sweep by any means. You can't go into L.A. and expect to do that. But if they come out of there with that one of the first two games, I think, you know, Boston is going to handle them fairly easy. And it's going to look, you know, as much as I wanted to see this series, you know, it's just the way that Boston's been playing lately, you know, with the strengths that they have, they have the most, the strongest lineup, certainly in this series. So it's going to be good. I'm anxious to hear, you know, and I want to see, and not that I'm a Phil Jackson hater, but I want to see him tune this up. He's going to tune this up, you know. Oh, you know, they're hitting me, now they're kicking me, you know. Now they talk about my mom, you know. Can't do anything right. They're just bullying us.
The real question is, can Phil Jackson coach a team to a championship when he doesn't have the obvious talent advantage?
That's right.
That's what he hasn't done to me yet.
That's right.
So in his other championships, he had Shaq and Kobe, you know, there for a little while, and in the other finals that he won, I'm trying to think back, because you're right, I think you're absolutely right there. You know, if I recall, I mean, so many of the finals that he coached in, he did have, you know, big time talent advantage. Kobe and Shaq would be that come to mind immediately, but I'm trying to think, you know, back
to
other finals that he coached.
With the second round. You may have to go back to the first round through the first three-peat that the Bulls had to find a series where they didn't have the talent advantage. But that second three-peat, they definitely had the talent advantage when they had Jordan, Pippen, Rodman. You know, I think in those series they definitely had the talent advantage, and then they had the ace of spades, you know, with Mike.
Right.
You know, they had the ultimate trump card.
Yeah, I mean, the one series you thought, you know, how's this going to turn out was when they played when they played the Lakers. You went to see what Magic was going to do. You know, the Portland series, I mean, you knew Portland probably had the talent, but you didn't know if they were mentally tough enough to handle the moment. Talent-wise, you probably could have said they had the talent, but you just didn't know. They'd broken down so many times before that, you know, you didn't know if they were going to be mentally tough enough to get over the top. The team that probably had the best chance of beating them was the Phoenix team, but Barkley was, you know, eating too many dinners with Michael. So,
Phil Jackson has not ever played in the championship where anybody thought he was going to lose. This is the first time people are saying, you know, this is the first that I can remember. This is the first time.
I think that first Boston series, I felt like they were going to lose, and they did.
Yeah.
And to me, that's really what the tale of the tape says about Phil, is that, you know, when he's not favored, he doesn't pull it out.
Are y'all calling him a front runner?
A bit, I guess you can go ahead and say that. He's a front runner.
I've been trying to say that, but see, people, you know, we might get all kinds of calls from Chicago. I call him a runner.
You're going to have calls from Chicago anyway, because they still think, you know, that any one of those Bull teams might have been one of the best teams ever. And at that point, you know, you run out of shit to say to them, you know. You can't even argue with that.
Hey, fellas, we got about 11 minutes left. I know there's a couple of topics we wanted to hit on real quick here. We all got a feel for the playoffs. We'll have an opportunity to talk about that a little bit later. I know, Marcus, you put on the table, we're talking a little bit about this NBA free agency summit. Can I call it that? The free agency summit that everybody's talking about. You know, I want to get everybody's opinion on that. You know, I just can't see people like Isaiah and Magic and folks getting together talking about where they're going to go. Yeah, I just Michael getting together with folks. I mean, to me, this is what I don't like about some of our young stars together. Sometimes just go do it on your own. Put your stuff. What's your legacy? I don't know. I want to see what everyone else thinks about this whole summit idea.
Well, I'll go ahead and chime in first. It really struck me as interesting because, you know, I was preparing a blog for this week, and I was going to talk about LeBron's decision and what is going to be at the root of his decision and why. And it, to me, it boiled down to two things for him, two things that really spoke to one bigger thing. And the two things were winning and then him being able to build himself as a – continue to build himself as a brand. And what those two things speak to ultimately are his legacy. And to me, he seems like he's very conscious of that. You know, it seems like he's taken, you know, that aspect of Kobe's personality, where Kobe from day one seems like he's been very conscious of, like, the moment and his legacy and where he stands and trying to build a resume to put himself in a conversation with Mike. And it seems like LeBron, since the day he's got to the league, has been focused on that as well. And so up until this whole summit idea, I had thought that LeBron's legacy was probably the most important thing to him, and that was really going to drive his decision. And to me, that was the reason why he was never going to end up in Chicago, because he's never going to be the greatest Bull. You know,
right.
If he goes to Chicago, he's never going to be the greatest Bull, and he's not going to get a statue next to Mike's outside. They're not putting another statue up outside the United Center. So to me, he had to go someplace. Either he had to stay in Cleveland or go someplace where he was going to be the icon for that franchise. He was going to be the franchise-defining player for that organization. But having the idea that he's talking to D-Wade and Chris Bosh and Amari Stoudemire and Dirk Nowitzki and these cats, and I don't know if Dirk is involved, but he should probably be involved before Stoudemire and Bosh are. I mean, he at least been to a finals. I mean, he didn't even know what the finals smell like.
You know, LeBron could end up in Chicago, and don't forget, you know, Larry Bird, you know, they never thought there was going to be another Bill Russell, you know. They never thought there'd be another Cousy, and then all of a sudden they had this dude named Bird. You know, there'd never be another Jerry West, you know, but all of a sudden there's this guy named Magic Johnson that they talk about. You know, he can go to Chicago. He can show up.
But they drafted Magic. Magic was already a stud and then said, I'm going there. And I think LeBron and Kobe are different than that, because Magic and Bird and those guys, they just wanted to win. They just wanted to play ball. I don't think they were necessarily concerned about their legacy like these two guys are. I think these two guys are a different breed of ball player.
Everybody's talking about their legacy. We talked kind of about that last week, you know. I'm not sold on LeBron. And if LeBron doesn't find himself in the right situation, if LeBron doesn't find himself a championship, you know, then you're going to talk about LeBron like you talk about Charles Barkley. And you know, he doesn't totally control that. He's just in the best position this year to figure out where that championship's going to come from. Now, solid money would tell him to stay in Cleveland. Solid money would tell him, you know, you can't go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're not gonna win a championship, if you don't know that, then you better stay in Cleveland, because no matter where you go, that's exactly why you're going there.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not gonna go straight up for the money, if you're gonna go somewhere, it's because you think that that's the quickest place that you're gonna win a championship.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have an opportunity to win that championship in Cleveland, then stay there and do it. Stay there and get it done. You have unfinished business in Cleveland. You know, I don't know.
I would say you know, Kareem going from Milwaukee to L.A. is probably similar to that.
Well, Kareem already won in Milwaukee.
Did he
win it? You already won it.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, shoot.
That's the only championship they won.
Yep, he got one with
Dude, that's right. That's right.
He got one with the
Big O.
He's got unfinished business.
Yeah, there's got to be Moses. There's got to be Moses going to Philly.
Situation is so different. That's why I think the situation is so different, because there hasn't been.
That's right.
Arguably, the best player in the league arguably hasn't ever come on the market without winning at his previous stop.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right.
So,
until it was kind of late. Until it was too late. You know, Charles left when it was kind of late. You know, Moses was still a relatively young man. you know, when he left. But he went to a team that had a superstar. How in the hell is LeBron going to go to a team and get paid like he should get paid and have that talent there? That's what I'm that's where I worry about him. You see, that's the kind of stuff you know that you worry about with a young man like LeBron. If he leaves Cleveland, he has to win a championship. Or, you know, he's not getting booed in Cleveland. You know, they're happy as hell to have him. Yeah, they went out in the first round, but they're still happy as hell to have him. Mm-hmm. But if he goes to New York, if he goes to Chicago and they don't win a championship, well, they ain't going to be too happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to be they're not going to be cheering him like you know, the hometown boy. Or the draft pick, you know, that is trying to make it happen. They're going to be angry. They're going to be outraged. And it's going to you know, that could work on his psyche, you know, because he's not winning. You know, they're the winningest team. You know, you're going to have to see it happen. He's going to have to, you know, just like Doc in Philly. You know, when they finally got to a position where Doc could truly see that championship, he took that game over. Yeah, they had Moses Malone, but it was Doc that grabbed that ball and said, "I'm getting mine." Just that fact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at that last final, that first championship he won. You know, and that Philly team was the most prolific team in basketball for like 5 years. They win more games in the regular season than Boston, regular season than L.A. You know, they were the most prolific winning team, but they couldn't win a championship. And LeBron is sitting in that same position. LeBron, if he sits in Cleveland, sooner or later something's going to fall into his lap. And when it does, when it clicks, then he'll be the hero that you always thought he was. If he goes to New York and falls on his face, you're going to have issues. You're going to have ramifications.
This is what kind of pushes out in front of everybody is that, like, Bron's been in the league for about 8 years, and we still don't know what this cat is.
Right.
Is he a full-out, like, I can't see, I haven't, he's had moments like that. I can't say that because he gave it to Detroit that 1 year where he scored, like, 30-some points in a row.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, just thinking about how Kobe iced that series the other night, and thinking, does LeBron have those kind of moments in him? And he does. He's had those moments, so I can't say he doesn't, because he does, and he's done that before. But it's just interesting to hear this conversation, because it's just like, what is LeBron? Is he that true? Like, is he in that is he working towards that conversation with Mike and Larry and Magic and Kobe, or is he going to be a phenomenal talent who just couldn't quite get there?
Right. You know, they said that I read an article about Jordan. The article was about his Hall of Fame speech, you know. But one of the quotes that I remember
he dogged out everybody, man.
One of the administrators, and I don't remember if it was a GM or who it was in Chicago, you know, said when you play Michael Jordan, he doesn't want to beat you. He wants you dead. And you know, he ain't just happy to beat you. He wants your soul. He wants your soul. Does LeBron James go after that soul? Does LeBron James finish you like Kobe finished Phoenix the other night? They got Amar Stoudemire scarred for life. Scarred for life. You know, he's sitting at home watching them jump shots, you know, in his sleep. You know, Nash is scarred for life. You know what Jordan did to Barkley when they were down in Phoenix, that scarred his ass for life. He just knew it was never going to happen. You know, but when Michael Jordan chewed up the Jazz, them boys were scarred for life. They just knew, you know, if we ever win a championship, it ain't going to be against the Bulls. That's what LeBron has to do in Cleveland. Get him a couple players that he can push some of the movies off onto, and then just get nasty with it.
Well, we'll end on that note about Sky for Life. Albert Ruhr, thank you for coming on with us. Y'all can catch us at realsportsguys.com. Check out our blogs coming on. Get us on Facebook, Real Sports Guys on Facebook and on Twitter. We love to hear from y'all. Help us develop the show. Give us a feedback. Until next week, take it easy.
Albert, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hello? Hello?